Okay, maybe I could begin. I'm Lori, I'm a compulsive overeater. Let's say the Serenity Prayer just to get ready. Let's have a moment of silence for those who are still suffering within the program, within and without the program. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. I will not mind you double. Okay, thank you. If you put them in the back. I'm handing out a series of forms. The first form is resentment. I'll be talking about that in a few minutes. Just to repeat for the benefit of those who haven't been here before, all of the handouts that are coming out, that are coming to you today, all of them are available on a website, OA Big Book, all one word, oabigbook.info, I-N-F-O. Information about the Big Book in OA, oabigbook.info. It's not .net, it's not .com, it's not .org, it's just information. And as well, you can if you go there, you can download a copy of a book that gives you far more detail than I'm giving you today about where this is derived from and what parts of the Big Book sort of prove what I'm going to be asserting to you today. This is a shortened version of a Big Book study that normally is about twice as long as it's going to take today and tomorrow. So I'm abridging a lot of stuff. I'm not giving you some of the proof that I normally like to give as sort of proof, maybe the wrong word, but the evidence for my interpretation, for the interpretation I've been given, not my interpretation, the interpretation I've been given. You'll also find a link to a podcast of a lengthier Big Book study, and you'll find a link to a do-it-yourself Big Book study where just the directions are given with no quotations from the Big Book, just sort of this is what the Big Book says to do in order to do step one, step two, and stuff like that. So I hope with those resources, it can make up for any deficiencies in what I say. So it's oabigbook.info. And if you want to contact me, there's a link there to contact the person. My name's not on there. It better not be. But it'll get me. It'll get to me. You know, listening to Don last night, listening to Harlan at noon today, made me so grateful to be here. I just want to say for those who are listening on the tape, buy their tapes. They were just absolutely wonderful. It allows me, I think, to go on without having to sort of go back and summarize steps 1, 2, and 3 or emphasize the significance of them. These are guys who have far greater experience than I have of compulsive eating and far greater experience than I have of a recovery that is just so remarkable. All I've been given is a bunch of people have helped me understand the Big Book, and I've been given the opportunity to give you the understanding that they've given me, and I'm very grateful for that. Well, I'm hoping today, this afternoon, to finish at least step 9. I might go into step 10. Just to back up slightly, we've made a decision in step 3, and now we're going to carry forward. We're finally going to take action. It's nothing to think it through. It takes some resolve. It takes an understanding of the despair you should feel in step 1. It takes some work to figure out an honest plan of eating, not a dishonest one. Which I certainly had for a while, not just a while. It takes some effort, I think, to understand what it means to be selfish from the Big Book perspective or to run a life based on self-will. But ultimately, we haven't done a thing. We've sat around, and it saddens me to see, because I used to do it, the 1, 2, 3 waltz. Steps 1, 2, 3, relapse. Steps 1, 2, 3, relapse. And, you know, there are groups within OA who have this wonderful, wonderful ceremony of stepping up, I think it's called, where, you know, it's a plant. It ain't a cake, but, you know, it's a plant or it's a candle or something. You've taken step 3 and you're feeling really good. You've gone through a certain process of understanding where you are, and you're now given step 4 to do. Well, there are many different step fours, many different ways of doing step four. I'm going to give you a way I've been taught. It was actually developed by a guy named Blaine D., an AA member in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, who's given permission for the use of this method. It's as close to the big book as possible. You will note some differences between this and Joe and Charlie's various methods of doing them. If I had time, I'd go into the differences. But if you're at all interested, I can tell you during a break the differences and why there are the differences, because there are reasons for the differences. But Joe and Charlie bring in their step four from some of the stuff from the AA 12 and 12. Here's my only original joke. I'm going to tell you about seven or eight jokes. The only one is original. It may not be that funny. How many OAers does it take to screw in a light bulb? And the answer is, hey, I've already answered 170 questions. I'm not going to answer anymore. If you know what I mean. There are many ways of doing step four, and they clearly work for many people. And so I don't call them down. I do know that the way in which the big book suggests it can be done very quickly. I've seen it done by people within a week. 3 weeks to 4 weeks is relatively reasonable. Past 6 weeks, then, as I like to say, either you're in a coma or you just aren't giving the time you should. It's really relatively quick. I would call it mechanical, but I will say that much of it is really just basically reflecting what's going on in your own mind. It is simple, and it requires some introspection and some thought. But it really is an action step. If our problem is that we want things to be different, then, and if our problem, may I ask someone to get me another glass of water, please? If someone's getting it, thank you. If our problem is that we have a mind that keeps sending us back to the food ingredients and our eating behaviors that cause us uncontrollable cravings, if that's our problem, if our problem is that we keep going back, and Harlan did a great job of describing that, thank you, then our problem is in our mind. What can unblock our minds? What can give us the clarity so that we, as any intelligent, sane human being, would be able to respond to anything that causes them harm? Why would I indulge in this? Other people can eat this, but for me, it's poison. That's what we're aiming for, that serenity to say, I can't eat it. It's simple as that. Then what we must do, the big book says, is we have to have a spiritual awakening, some kind of personality change sufficient to overcome compulsive eating. If our problem in terms of getting a spiritual awakening is that we have blocked ourselves off from our deepest values, then clearly we have to find something to unblock ourselves and to let the flow go. I was asked by a number of people after the break, boy, you're curious. You're an agnostic. Do you pray? Yes, I do. But whom do you pray to? What I believe in. But can that thing accomplish anything? Yes. It has given me freedom from compulsive eating. Is it alive? No. Does it exist? Not really. It's a concept. But that's what I do. And I'll go more into that as I get into step 11. But for me, it's not hard to translate, although sometimes I really resent having to translate, the concept of turn my will and my life over to the things I most believe in, the care of the things I most believe in. I happen to believe in concepts, powerful concepts, concepts that have motivated people over the years, that have motivated them to die for their concepts. And we see all over the world people willing to die for truth and justice and love. I mean, all over the world people are willing to do that. I have no idea whether I'm a coward or not, if ever faced with that issue. But I know that they're more important than I am. I do know that. Whether I'd be willing to die for them, well, luckily, I've never had to make that choice. I've never been faced with the opportunity. I know I'd die for my kids. I annoyed that for my wife. I know that someone pointed a gun at them, I'd jump in the way. I would do that. But other than that, I have no idea how brave I am. But I do know that they're more important than I am. And I do know that while I was into the food, while I was unable to stop myself from going back, I was in a state of insanity such that I was not living according to what I believed in. I was not being truthful. I was not being just. I was not being loving. And I was not embodying a beauty. I was not beautiful. But yes, I won't go there. As people on the tape all believe that I'm a living God, right? So, so how do we go about doing this? And the Big Book provides a method. The 12 steps provide a method that really works. Now, there, as I said, there are many ways of doing it. And you know, if you read the story of the guy who brought AA to Chicago, which you'll find on page 263 of the fourth edition and 292 of the third and second edition, you'll see that he sets out there the six steps. He says, I was in Akron, Ohio for a month and talking to the guys, and then Dr. Bob had me over on his day off to do the steps in a formal way. I read this because I think it's really significant. It was Dr. Bob's afternoon off, page 263. He had me to the office, and we spent 3 or 4 hours formally going through the six-step program as it was at that time. And I'll just read them. These six steps were complete deflation, step one, dependence and guidance from a higher power, step 11, moral inventory, step 4, confession, step 5, restitution, step 9, 8 and 9, continued work with other alcoholics, step 12. That's it. Now listen to how he describes Dr. Bob's method of doing it. Dr. Bob led me through all of these steps. He had a couple hours. We spent 3 or 4 hours formally going through the steps. Dr. Bob led me through all of these steps. At the moral inventory, he brought up several of my bad personality traits or character defects, such as selfishness, conceit, jealousy, carelessness, intolerance, ill temper, sarcasm, and resentment. We went over these at great length, 3 to 4 hours. And then he finally asked me if I wanted these defects of character removed. When I said yes, we both knelt at his desk and prayed, each of us asking to have these defects taken away. This picture is still vivid. If I live to be 100, it will always stand out in my mind. It was very impressive. I wish that every AA could have the benefit of this type of sponsorship today. So here's a guy, and this is shown, there's a Back to the Basics movement that rests on the way Dr. Bob did it. It rests on this concept of a charismatic change. Charismatic may be the wrong word. A sudden, powerful change that in this guy's case, I blanked his name, was accomplished by a charismatic man, a saintly man, who was able to lean over that guy and say, you have been the most despicable character in the entire world, haven't you? Yes, Dr. Bob. You've been selfish, haven't you? Yes, Dr. Bob. Yeah, I mean, that's how he did it. You can hear that, right? You've done this and you've done that. Yes, Dr. Bob. Do you want God to remove all these defects of character? Yes, Dr. Bob. Get on your knees. You know, I mean, is that kind of a... Well, I'm not kidding you. I mean, that's what happened. And if you... I think it's Mel B who's written a book on Back to Basics, and a lot of people follow Back to Basics. That's not the individual, but that's the group doing it. There's 6 weeks and you're doing it within a group. And you're, I don't know if you're kneeling in there, but you're working those things through, bang, 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 which is like the way Dr. Bob did it. When Bill developed the Big Book, when he wrote the Big Book and set out a method of doing inventory, I'll make you bet that no one did it this way. But what he did was find a way by which it could be done by the person who had no AA-er around, and certainly didn't have Dr. Bob around. No one charismatic. No one around who could guide you through this moral inventory. But he developed a way of doing it. Whether he did it or whether he borrowed it from someone else, there's some argument as to whether there's an Oxford Group pamphlet that has this. But this is really, when you put it down, it's a relatively, I would say it is unique. To the best of my knowledge, but if anyone here has better knowledge than I do, I'd love to hear about it. He put it all together in a way that is so simple and I think very brilliant. Put it in a nutshell. You start off with resentments, which are the past didn't go my way. It's as simple as that. The past did not go my way. I'll talk a lot more about that. And you end up through a process, which I'll talk about, with four character defects and only four. Selfish, but remember selfish means a lot more than it does in the dictionary. Dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. You then, under the fear, deal with one of those character defects, the frightened part, and you outgrow it by using the method set out in the big book. You then, under the sex conduct one, deal with very difficult relationships, because when the body is talking as well as the mind in sex conduct issues, and I'll talk about sex conduct, be very broad, you then deal with selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate, which is the other side of self-seeking. If you're self-seeking, you're inconsiderate. You're not thinking of other people. So in the course of these other two, fears and sex conduct, you're learning what you should have done instead and what God would have you be. You're outgrowing fear, and you're learning alternative methods of being unselfish, considerate, and honest. Thus, in step four itself, you're not only identifying your character defects, you're learning how to get rid of them. I think that's brilliant. Whether he had that in mind or not, that's what he wrote down. And so as you go through that, and you'll see as these forms, each of these forms is different because they follow the big book approach. The resentment form is where you identify your character defects. The fear and sex conduct issues is where you begin to outgrow the fears and understand how to live in an unselfish, on how you could have done things in a unselfish, considerate, and honest way, non-self-seeking and honest way. That's the general concept. And I hope to be able to go through, before a break, I hope to be able to explain the forms in some way, and I'll be asking you to look at them. First of all, I just want to, and again, there are many ways of doing it. And, you know, there are some that I really dislike, and I won't tell you which ones they are, but there are some that I think are very dangerous. But whatever form, whatever method you use of doing step four, at least consider what I'm about to say. If this method causes you to delay doing step four, and then doing step five, and then doing six and seven and eight, scrap it. You know, even if the method that I'm going to give you creates a delay, if you just can't do it that way, find another one. Do it. Listen to what the big book says on page 63 after we take step three. Right at the bottom. Next, we launched out, as I said to you, that's propelling ourselves from the dock with great force. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision, and any time the big book uses the word decision from now on, it means step three, which is a decision. Simply a decision, but a decision. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have... I hope that's not me. It's not.
Sorry.
That's okay. Don't worry about it. So our decision was a vital and crucial step. It could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Things in ourselves, we'll find out, are the character defects blocking us from what? From the sunlight of the Spirit. Our liquor was but a symptom. So we have to get down to causes and conditions. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. So step four, from the big book perspective, is starting upon the inventory. We'll see that we finish it in step nine. And that's really important in order to understand what step ten is all about. I told you I relapsed for two reasons. One of them is I accepted the what all the doctors and the diets tell me is that I could eat anything in moderation. The other was I did not understand step 10, and I'll talk about that either later on this afternoon or tomorrow morning. And I didn't understand what the word inventory. I read the step on the wall, step 4, made a searching, fearless, moral inventory, and I thought, well, that's the inventory. But no, as you'll see from the description in this paragraph on page 64, the inventory process, T, keep wanting to say process because I'm a Canadian. The inventory process is identifying and being rid of the things which are blocking us. Listen to this. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact finding. When you find facts, you're searching for facts, searching. And a fact facing, fearless. When you face facts, you're fearless. A fact finding and fact facing, searching and fearless process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock and trade, which you have. Now, a commercial inventory, you tote up the good stuff, you tote up the bad stuff, you know what your stock and trade is, you know everything. But they go on, they say one object of an inventory is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods to get rid of them promptly and without regret. So the purpose of our inventory is this one part of what is a normal commercial inventory. Commercial inventory, you itemize everything. But one object is to get rid of the bad stuff. And that's what we're trying to do here. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup, which caused our failure. That's step four. And it will be step five as well, where we get the feedback we need to make sure we're right, or at least we're being honest. That's step four. By the way, it says, first we searched out the flaws. The big book is full of these, but this is one excellent example of there's a first, but there's no second. There's no next. At least within any identifiable series of pages, there's no next or first. We'll find out that that's what step 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 are all about. That's the next part. We identify, and then we get rid of the defects of character which are blocking us. We'll find that 4 and 5 identify them, 6 and 7, and I know that there are people in this room who disagree with this, but 6 and 7 are very quick. They're done right after step 5 from the big book perspective. You do them quickly, you're ready, you do it, you say the prayer, and then in 8 and 9, you get rid of them. You get rid of them how? Because you're going to be saying to people, in effect, I am different from what I used to be. And I want to make up for what I did when I used to be something else. I'm trying to live a different life. I have to make up for what I've done. In so doing, you are now beginning to act unselfishly, honestly, unself-seeking or considerately or looking out for the benefit of others, and without fear. You're facing your fear. So that the whole process is steps 4 through 9. It's exciting, you said. Yeah, well, I think I found it very exciting. Being convinced that self manifests in various ways, self coming out in various ways, was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations, the way they come out in general. They start off with resentment is the number one offender. Now, the word resentment comes from the Latin meaning of two Latin words, re, R-E, or depending on how you learned Latin. You might have learned medieval Latin as opposed to classical Latin. But re, sentira. Sentira is to feel. Re or re means again. Re sentira is to feel again. It's a very broad concept. It is true that the big book uses the word anger in various points. But I find it very valuable, and this is one area where I can only speak from experience and not completely from the big book, but I can sort of. Is that a resentment is anything that bothers you. Anything. It may be something you've done to others as well as what others have done to you or to people you love or people you care about. But it's anything that is living rent-free in your mind. It is the what-ifs and the if-onlys of your life. It is the regrets. It is the past didn't go my way. As simple as that. And it's off the top of your head. Everything that's in your mind. Is a resentment that's bothering you. When you approach it from that very broad perspective, treat it, if you were a real big book thumper and a literalist, treat it as, I'm angry that these things exist. I'm angry that I did this to someone. Now, you may say, well, I've never felt anger. Fine. I mean, a lot of us can say, oh, I've never felt angry. I feel pity. I feel sadness. You know, I don't know if you were like that, but I was, oh, I've never been angry. You know, I'm not angry that people do evil in this world. I'm saddened that people do evil in this world. True. I mean, I suppose I could say that. But so anger is a word that has very many meanings to very many people, you know. Just think of it as very broadly, the past didn't go my way. When you get to fears, by the way, fears are the future won't go my way, right? This is very simple. So, the big book says it destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. The only place where Bill used the word disease rather than illness. And the reason he used disease is because it's a spiritual disease. But he goes on, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, because he used the word illness to describe the mental and physical state, to take it out of the realm of the doctors, to keep it away from medicine and science. We have been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. We are not going to get over anything until we have the spiritual awakening, which is promised to us by the big book after step 9. Now, I'd love to read the directions. I'd love to spend time on that, but I'm going to ask you to look at the form and to look at it along with me. Because I just don't have time to read it and then to sort of correlate the form to the wording. But accept, you don't have to accept anything I say, but if you read the big book carefully, I think you'll find that what I'm going to tell you comes from the big book. I hope it's not. If not, tell me. I'll be happy to rethink the whole thing. You've got the form in front of you. It's the resentment form. It's the one that was handed out. If anyone needs more copies, there's copies in the back. Pardon me? You're out. Well, you can always... There are a few people who got more than one. Now, listen, give them away, because you can always download them from oabigbook.info. As a matter of fact, for those of you who are computer people, you can not only download them, you can fill them out on the computer. oabigbook.info. Extra ones here. If anyone wants them, put up your hand and... Okay. Now, these are not my forms. These are forms that were developed by Blaine D. in Winnipeg, and with his permission have been some slight, very minor changes.
Lauren?
Yeah?
When you mention the book on the site, is that free?
Yes, it's everything's free. All right. How can I sell it? Can't. It's all free. So the book looks like this. It's two columns, a small font, and I hope you enjoy it, or not, if you wish. But it provides some kind of evidence. It provides more of the discussion of the big book, so it might be helpful. I will be handing out, by the way, at the end, a summary of the instructions that I'm about to give you for filling out steps, the forms. So it's not quite as good, I think, because I wrote that a while ago. I think the book is better than the instructions, and so is that do-it-yourself link that's on the website, but it should provide you with a lot of what I'm saying. Okay. The first thing to remember is anytime the big book gives directions, you follow them before you go on to any others. So it says, in dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. So you fill out the first column first. And you'll see in column one, you fill out column one. Now, you might have 500 resentments. You might have only 20. I don't know how many you've got, but it's anything that's living rent-free on your mind. The big book says you set out people, institutions, and principles that bother you. They say that you're angry at, that bother you, that you wish weren't true. And people are people. You just set them down. And I have set down people as significant in my life as Hitler, who had a tremendous impact on me and various subordinates within the Nazi hierarchy, as well as the guy who cut me off at the corner when I was trying to cross the street. I mean, it's from the horrible to the ridiculous. I've set down ex-girlfriends. I put down my wife. I put down my mother, my father. I mean, you can do whatever. I put down people I've harmed. I put down people who've harmed me. I put down people who've harmed others. I once put down someone who was really awful to my dad who didn't even know me. I put down anything that was bothering me. And my advice and my experience tells me if you write it down one day and you pick it up the next morning, more will be revealed. Because you're getting rid of things that are percolating within your mind. Sometimes you have to get rid of one onion skin in order to get some more. But at a certain point, you'll stop. I mean, you'll have it all, you know. So people are people. Institutions are collections of people. And when I first started working this way of doing the steps, I was told that it was very good advice. If you know the person, write down the person's name. If you don't know the person and it's a group of people, that's when you write down the institution. So as a lawyer, I wrote down the justice system because I didn't think it particularly provided justice. So I wrote down a particular university. I wrote down, well, besides writing down specific talk show hosts, I also wrote down talk show hosts in general as an institution. So I wrote down some institutions. Now, principles is never described or defined in the big book. And all I can say is I found it very useful to think of a principle as being something which I wish were not true. And that can range from there is evil in this world, or there are horrible things going on in this world, or people are dying in this world, or innocent people are being sacrificed, I don't know what, things that bother me generally, to things like I'll never get any better. This is my fifth relapse. I don't think I'll ever lose weight. The poor will always be with you. Life is hell and then you die. So-and-so will never change. I might write down so-and-so as well, but so-and-so will never change. I will always look for people's praise. I will always be self-seeking. You know, you can write down fears. You can write down anything that bothers you, any fact or presumed fact or thought of fact that you wish were not true. So there you're writing down. You don't write yourself down, but you can write down all kinds of things about yourself. One of the main reasons the big book never talks about putting yourself down as resentment. And I think one of the reasons is to counteract this concept of, well, the first amend I have to make is to myself. That's baloney. You read the big book, it's all about amends to other people. It's all about being outside of yourself, not living inside yourself. What would people say? Don't never go alone into your mind. It's an unsafe place, you know? I mean, that whole concept is right there. Don't deal with yourself. It's all to get you thinking and acting for others rather than for yourself. So you just make a list. The only practical advice I give you from that form is that there are places in column three. There are three little boxes. You've got those little boxes there. If you know that in the second column, which I'm about to describe, you're going to write a lot, just fill out the top box and don't fill out the second and third box because you're going to write a lot in the second column. There's a dotted line on that. That's going to help you fold the sheet over. It's not intended to prevent you from going through the entire space there. Do you see the dotted line? Oh, maybe there isn't a dotted line. Yeah, there is a dotted line. There's two dotted lines. Those are fold-over places. I'll talk about them later. So you just write it down. And I want to ask you, ask yourself, how long will that take you in terms of minutes? It may take you days to do because you've got to, well, make sure you list it all. But in terms of a number of minutes, how long would it take you to write down short little names or institutions or principles? How long would it take you to write them down? Half hour, maybe an hour, an hour in total. I mean, obviously you might want to space it over a couple of days, but you just write it down. Now, for many of us, just writing it down has a wonderful effect because we look at some of these and we say, I'm worried about that. That's bothering me. This is so silly. So it has that effect. But sometimes it's real deep stuff, you know, and I don't know what to do with my life. You know, there's one question. I don't know, and I've written this down, I don't enjoy my work. I don't know what else to do with my life. I am worried that my marriage is going to dissolve. You know, things of that sort, like some very deep stuff, which is not going to be, you're not going to look at it and say, oh yeah, well, I'm worried about that, no problem, you know. But some of them will go away. You know, they won't go away, but you'll acknowledge that they are not significant, especially in light of all the other things which are. Friends of mine who've been horribly abused have written down their abuse and the abuser. I'll never get better. This will kill me for the rest of my life. I will never get out of the memory of that moment or those series of moments or those years. But they've also written down the person or persons who did it as well. That's it for column one. And you just write it out. Column two. You write out why you have, why you wish they weren't true. It's as simple as that. Why you wish these things were not true. Why this person is on the list, why this institution is on the list, or why the principles you wrote down were not a fact. You write down why. And I heard a big book study once where it was pointed out in the example on page 65 of the big book, they're only, the longest entry in this is 19 words. And the guy said, I give my sponsees one extra word. They can't put down any more than a 20-word summary of the reasons, of the reason. Now, it's just a point form. But you write down as many reasons as you may want. I mean, you know, I have an imaginary wife, and I stress that this is an imaginary wife, because my wife is wonderful.
If you're ever listening to this, she's terrific.
And she is. I mean, she's absolutely the best wife you could ever want. Anyway, yeah, reminds me of, I guess I shouldn't get political, but if anyone remembers this, it was, we could kill them, but that would be wrong. I don't know if anyone remembers that from the ancient past, but anyway. Shouldn't have done that. Lost my train of thought. So you're just in point form. So here's an imaginary wife. Spends too much money. Not enough sex. Makes a noise when she eats. Okay? Now, I mean, you realize some are really deep and some are just minor, but you write them down, you know? I mean, with a spouse or a significant other, it could be, you know, doesn't do the dishes, you know, makes me feel like a dimwit, and doesn't put the seat down, you know, it doesn't put the toilet seat down. I mean, they can be minor things or big things, but you just write them down. For Hitler, hey, you know, when I thought about it, I had about three or four things I wrote down. They were deep, but they were just three or four things. Responsible for the death of millions of people. That's pretty deep, but that's what I wrote down. It could happen again. That's pretty deep, but I wrote that down. I didn't have to elucidate those or go into any detail. I knew what they meant. And you'll find, at least the way I'm going to suggest step five is done, you only have to understand it yourself. You're not going to read it off. You don't have to read it off. It's just what it means like to you. So, for instance, I had relationship in which there was a 24-hour period that just changed my life, or at least I thought it did. You know, and I could, if I were a good writer, I could write a story or a novel about just those 24 hours. And I don't know if I remember it as much now, but believe me, 20 years ago, I remembered it. I remembered every single second. I relived it. I could have done this. I could have said this and this, you know, all these things. You know what I did when I wrote down that person? I wrote down certain things about that person. But in terms of that 24-hour period, I wrote down that day. That's all I wrote because I knew what I was talking about. So it's just a matter of putting down the sort of the significant issues. Just bang, bang, bang. Here you're venting. I mean, you're really just venting here, but you're confined. You're not writing a novel. You're just venting. But specific things. How long is that going to take? Well, I suggest to you that in terms of total number of hours, as opposed to the number of days it might take you to do it, because it's not easy to write it all down. Sometimes you want to take a break. But you end up, 5-6 hours, really, in terms of total time. So you're just venting. And, well, for some of them, you might find that you say, this is what's bothering me. You know, and you might sort of say, well, that's not that significant. And you begin to filter out some of the stuff already. You begin to feel much better about it. Okay, so that's the second column. And you fill out the whole second column before you go on to the third column. Now, the third column has six different subsets. Let's see if I can remember them in the right order. Self-esteem, security or pocketbooks. Pocketbooks, from the big book perspective, means money, you know, pocketbooks. Not paperbacks, but your pocketbook, your wallet, you know. So security, but they say, in one place they use the word security, in the other place they use pocketbooks. It's obviously financial security, but I would say any kind of security, any kind of feelings of being unsafe. The third one is ambitions, what you want out of life. That's what an ambition is, what you want out of life. The next one is personal relations. The next one is sex relations. Oh, self-esteem, I left that out? No.
No, you got the first one.
I got the first one, yeah. The next one is personal relations, sex relations, and is any fear involved. These are the six categories. I leave out pride, even though that's in the example, because self-esteem and pride, it seems to me, are very simple, similar. So you've got the six columns. You got your choice here. I personally find it more powerful to go down each column, each sub-column. So I do all the self-esteem issues before I go on to the security issues. But some people go across. There's no instructions in the big book, so do whatever you want. If you're going to follow the big book, there's no instructions that way. Now, the reason, by the way, you go down, or let me put it this way, my experience has shown me that the reason for going down rather than across in this thing is, first of all, the big book tells you to. The other is, very practically speaking, you begin to see patterns. And those patterns, for instance, in the second column where you're writing out why these people are on your list, let's say you write down six friends. And you spend a lot of time working on one of them and writing down in those second column the reasons why that friend is on your list. You're going to find that after a time you're going to write ditto, ditto, ditto. This friend is the same as that friend. You know, you might add one and say all the rest are the same. You know what I'm saying? Like, you begin to see patterns in your life. It's tremendously instructive. And the same with this one. So the quest for each column, and they're very narrow, is you put a check mark where this particular point that you've got in column two affects your self-esteem or affects your security or affects your ambitions or affects your personal relations, affects your sexual relations, or whether fear is involved. So just to take a few examples. Hitler. So I had three things. One was responsible for the death of millions. Second was it could happen again. And the third was got away with it, you know, for so long. So if I go down, was self-esteem involved in any of those? Not really. Oh, I know, it spawned anti-Semitism. I had four things. Spawned anti-Semitism. Well, that certainly did affect my self-esteem, this anti-Semitism. I put a check mark only under spawned anti-Semitism, but I didn't put a check mark under self-esteem for responsible death of millions, it could happen again, got away with it. For the ex-girlfriend I had, well, let's take the imaginary wife. Not enough sex affects self-esteem. Spends too much money doesn't affect self-esteem. It might. I mean, under some circumstances, I might have put down, yes, it affects my self-esteem, if, in fact, my inability to earn money meant that she was critical of me, you know, in this imaginary wife. My
wife does not spend too much. Yes, she does. No, she doesn't.
So not enough sex, self-esteem, spends too much money, doesn't affect self-esteem. So I'm just giving you examples where, you know, I have to think about it. I have to sort of think it through. Does this affect my self-esteem? If it does, then this way. I think this is dripping. Then I go on to the, so I do that for all of the sheets that I have filled out, okay? Before I go on to the next column, which is security. Does it affect my security? Now, I'm very broad on this because it's not always financial security. It can be just safety, you know. It can be financial. So, you know, not enough sex. Well, that might involve my fear, my sense of it affects the security of our marriage. So I might write that down. Might not. There's no magic to this. It doesn't matter that much. It's just you're looking at each one and you're seeing whether it affects you. That's all. You know, spends too much affects my pocketbook. Hitler responsible for the death of millions of people. I don't know what I did that about 20 years ago, 15, 20 years ago. So I don't remember what I did write down, but I might have said affects my security. I might not have said affects my security. It could happen again. that affects my security. Spawn anti-Semitism, that affects my security. Okay? So there are different things. You know, I don't know what to do with my life. Sure affects my security, you know. All the but you know what? Some of them don't. Like I'll tell you when I get to step 10, I have never made a decision in my recovery for 18 and three quarter years. I've never made a decision without using these forms and going through steps 4 through 9. I call them step 10, and I'll talk about that tomorrow, why they're step 10s and not step 11s. But to make any decision, and I've made a series of, I've made some career moves, which, and I have used these forms to make that decision. So at times I've written down, I'm unhappy with my job or with my career. I've written down the reasons. Some of the reasons were, I could be doing something more useful, and then underneath that I'd write down, I have no idea what I could be doing. you know, well, some of them affect my security, some of them don't. I might write down, I have 5 options open towards me, I don't know which one to choose. I might write down all 5 of those options. Some of them will affect my security, some of them won't. You know, when I was made a decision to give up the practice of law and enter into a completely different career, boy, did that affect my sense of security. It was a major thing. So I would write that down. So these are all just things that you write down. Sometimes you check them and sometimes you don't. On the form, you press a, you know, you press an X and check mark appears. Really neat. And by the way, if you use the tab, it'll send you down the column, not across. I have nothing to do with that. This Howard W. from Minneapolis did that, and we're ever grateful to him. So that's security. And you go down all the different copies you may have, whether you have 20 pages, 50 pages, 100 pages. I've never met anyone with 100 pages of this, but there may be someone who has them. The next one is ambitions. Well, usually that will be checked because an ambition is what I want out of life. And if these are resentments, I wish they hadn't occurred. Generally speaking, all of the reasons that they're existing in column 2, that I've written down in column 2, have to do that my ambitions are thwarted. So generally there'll be check marks there. You know, Hitler, responsible for the death of millions of people, yeah, affects my ambitions. I wish it weren't true. See, ambitions is very broad, right? It's not what I want for myself, it's what I want out of life. Okay, so that's ambitions is what I want out of life. So I've got that whole list. Now, I'm not going to bore you with going through it, but those are the examples. And there are examples given in both the book that I've written and in that do-it-yourself thing that may help you anyway. The next column is affects my personal relations. Well, you know, take the Hitler thing as a good example. Response to the death of millions. You know what? It didn't affect my personal relations. On the other hand, if I happened to be in a relationship with a Holocaust denier, it would affect my personal relations. You know, so it just depends on my circumstances. It could happen again. Affects my ambition. It doesn't affect my personal relations. Personally, it doesn't affect it. But I may have a sense at a certain time in my life at various times that I can see it happening again, and then I get worried, and then I would write down it affects my personal relations if I'm in a relationship with people who might be doing or saying things that allow these things to go on in the future. So I might write it down. You know, if I meet people and I'm in relationship with people who are intolerant, maybe not about Jews, but are intolerant in other respects, and maybe not even racially or ethnically, but are just intolerant people, I might be worried that intolerance can lead to pain. So it just depends. I don't know. At the moment, I'm not in that position. I don't know people like that. I read about them, I see them, but I don't know them. So it doesn't affect my personal relations. Sexual relations, well, sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. I suppose if I were during a time when I might have been obsessing about the Holocaust, I suppose it's possible that when I was sexually interested that I would say, yeah, but people are being killed all over this world, and it sort of affected my enjoyment of sex. I don't know if it's possible. If I'm Woody Allen, that's right. That's right. But it may be more in my personal relations. So that's sex relations. And then the last is any fear involved. And very often there is fear involved. It could happen again, fear involved. Response to the death of millions, maybe fear. got away with it? Yes, fear. Spawn anti-Semitism? Yes. You know, spends too much money? Yes. Not enough sex? Fear? Yeah. Fear. And I've forgotten, it makes a noise when they eat. No fear. You know? So you just, the whole point is to focus on the effect. Now, at this point, I'm going back to the big book. Right at the bottom, page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. So it's clear that the big book is also opening the door to putting down on the resentment list things that we did to others. Remorse. They talk about remorse. And that's why I say if you interpret resentment very broadly as something you wish weren't true, you can write down things that you've done to others. Because this broad interpretation of resentment is there, you don't need a fourth form of harm you've done to others, which Joe and Charlie use, because you've written that down in the resentment form. The usual outcome is people can... But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. On my first step four, I wrote down people I couldn't be in the same room with. And that was an amazing thing because there were five people I couldn't be in the same room with, including a lawyer against whom I was doing a case that I was in the middle of. Because he had betrayed my trust. He had just completely, he was thought of as an honorable person and he lied and cheated to win this case. And it harmed my client and harmed, not my client as much, as harmed people as a result of that. And I was in the same room with him for days. And yet, two-thirds of my mind was that, someday I'll get him. And meanwhile, I'm losing the case. You know? So the victor only seemed to win. What's the people talk about taking poison and hoping the other person will die. The big book goes on. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander, we waste the hours that might have been worthwhile. This is true for anyone. This is not just true for us. It's true for anyone. But with the alcoholic, the compulsive eater, whose hope, and by the way, in the original manuscript, they used to say whose only hope. They took that out, but I believe it should be there. Whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. Listen to the dead words here. Infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring, when holding such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. And with us to drink is to die. The first bite, we have to make it. As we carry the message, we have to make that first bite as dramatic as that concept. With us, the first drink, and with us to drink is to die. We have to find a way as individual people who carry the message to convey the drama and intensity of that emotion. The first bite will kill me. Because if we don't find that, if we don't find the way of conveying it from our own experience, deep within our heart, listen to Harlan, listen to Don talk, I mean, that power that they spoke, I believe them. You know, and the passion that they brought, we have to find that passion within ourselves. With us to drink is to die. If we were to live, we have to be free of anger. Doesn't mean we can't be angry, but it means we have to be free of it. You know, I once heard Elizabeth Kubler-Ross speak with the five stages of death, five stages of grieving, yeah. And she said that the only true anger lasts 5 seconds. After that, it's sick. And I understand that. I mean, my wife once worked with someone who was a bully. No one bullies my wife, but was bullying other people I knew and really not nice to them and bullying them. And we'd go to staff parties. She'd come home and tell me, and I would get angry and angry at this person whom I didn't really know. And then we'd go to staff parties. Could I talk to that person? Absolutely not. You know who did? My wife. Because she would unburden herself, and then she could talk to that person. I couldn't talk. I was angry at my friend. I told my friend my wrath did end. I was angry at my foe. I told it not. My wrath did grow. William Blake. There you are. Songs of Innocence. Maybe of experience. I don't know. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. And Bill explains that the brainstorm is the sudden rage, as Bill sees it, he explains that. So it's the grouch, which is the long-term kind of thing, and the brainstorm, which is the sudden rage, were not for us. Here's another one of those wonderful Bill vocabulary moments. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison.